Hello, this is Grigory Melnik and Fernando Simonazzi from Microsoft Patterns and Practices team out of Redmond, Washington. And today we are happy to bring you the preview of the new project, the new block that our team has been working on for the past couple of months. It basically helps you with auto-scaling your Windows Azure applications. But first, let me remind everybody about Antlib, Enterprise Library, what it is, what the mission is, and how the work we're doing in the Windows Azure space fits into that a larger agenda of the Enterprise Library program. So, as many of you may know, the Enterprise Library is essentially a collection of reusable components. We call them application blocks, which are testable, extensible, and they get shipped with the corresponding tests, with a lot of documentation, hands-on labs. And the other thing to keep in mind is that the Enterprise Library itself is a general purpose collection. So it is not specific to any application type or any architectural style. And I'm giving you the reference to our main homepage for the Enterprise Library to get more information. Taking into consideration that the Enterprise Library is of general purpose, we've been working on so-called integration packs, and we've released the Silverlight integration pack several months ago, and now the team is working on the Windows Azure integration pack. And the idea is that's when we take the Antlib application blocks and we fine-tune them and make it easier for those blocks to be used in the specific environments for the specific platforms. So for the Windows Azure, platform, the good news is that most of the Microsoft Enterprise Library 5.0 just works. There's some features that are not applicable due to the constraints of the Windows Azure itself, and we're offering the full discussion of those features in the white paper that you can find online. As we started working on the Windows Azure integration pack, and since most of the stuff works, we went and investigated what are the gaps in the Windows Azure offering today, what are the opportunities for us to provide added value, and we've identified several major themes. Here they are. So these include making applications more elastic, dealing with resiliency, so improving resiliency to errors. So that's dealing with all the transient failures that may come from your SQL Azure or from the App Fabric caching or some other sources. In enhancing data access, and some of the stories that are here, they include transactional support in the Windows Azure storage, providing or improving testability with some wrappers that are more TDD friendly, etc. Then we have a theme around the diagnostics and enhancing the login application block, helping with the cleanup of the diagnostic tables, helping with rolling logs. The configuration is another theme, and that's something, again, the Antlib being extremely configuration driven. We wanted to see what kind of additional support we can provide, including the protection, the secure providers for the configuration. And then a whole bunch of stories around the learnability. I just want to refer you to the product backlog you can find on our User Voice site. What we're going to talk today about is elasticity, making applications more elastic. And as many of you are aware, the ability to rapidly scale your applications in response to the demand, the changes in demand, is something that the Windows Azure offers and delivers if you are to host your applications in the cloud. But still, it's something that you need to take care of, or it could be your application operator or IT pros who will have to take care of, or it may be you who will write the code that will do that automatically through the Azure Management API, but it's still that work still needs to be done by someone. So what we're going to offer is the application block that takes care of the autoscaling and allows you basically to configure some rules that can be based on timetables or can be based on some KPIs or conditions, and the block will do the scaling for you. So that's the offering of the autoscaling application block, codenamed Wasabi. An important remark here is that it's not a tool, right?
Yes.
It's not a tool that like the Azure Connect or some other ones that you may be used to. So you still need to write an application that will host the block and then deploy it properly. And this is what we're going to actually show to you today. So very briefly, let me just let us mention the types of actions that we envision you would be able to take. The instance autoscaling, that's pretty self-explanatory. That allows you to increase, remove the number of instances for your worker roles, web roles, or other things. We refer to them as scale groups. We'll discuss that as well. Another type is what we originally called application rationing, but the common term used nowadays is application throttling. And the idea here is that instead of actually dealing with the demand by bringing in new instances, what you do, you actually adjust the mode of operation of your application so that the application will either do less or will do it in a different fashion that will essentially require less resources. Okay, so, and again, this is something that you may be able to use in the hybrid model, where up to certain maximum you will allow instance autoscaling, and after that you may choose to configure it so that the application throttling is taking effect. So, as I mentioned, the block needs to be hosted. You can host it in a variety of hosts. It could be a worker role. In fact, this is the one that makes a lot of sense to put your application that uses the autoscaler in. Or you can host it in a standalone app or Windows service or what have you. Let's talk briefly about the two types of rules that we're supporting. Those are constrained rules and reactive rules. The constrained rules, think about, the keyword here is timetable. Okay, so think of timetables, think of something that you can schedule ahead of time, and what you do, you proactively set limits on the number of instances. So the example would be something like every Friday you want a minimum number of instances for worker role A to be 1, maximum to be 3. Okay? Or every last day of the month, or what have you. So you can specify your recurrences in a fashion similar to the way you specify your calendar appointments in Outlook. And the constrained rules, effectively what they do, they allow you to guard your budget. So you think about your budget constraints so that, you know, you, on one hand you have your SLAs that you need to meet, on the other hand you know that you do not want to go over certain budget, and this is something that you can configure in these rules. The constrained rules will have ranks, and that's something to help you deal with overlapping rules. The other thing to mention here is that the constrained rules have higher precedence over reactive rules. So when it comes to evaluating rules and reconciling all of them, and when the autoscaler decides what it needs to do, what actions it needs to take, the constrained rules always overrule. So for the reactive rules, those are the rules that use the conditions to reactively adjust the number of instances or perform some other action, and they're based on either performance counters, or you can actually custom define your business metrics and then set some thresholds, and when those business metrics hit those thresholds, you would take some action. So this is the core. This is the piece that will effectively respond to these unexpected changes in demands for your application. And the reactive rules are there to guard you or to help you meet the SLA. Just a couple of quick examples of the patterns, how you see the these rules in action. So the red line is the maximum, the blue line is the minimum number of instances, and this is something that is defined by the constraint rules. In this example here, you see no constraint rules other than the default. In my case, it's 2 to 6. Okay, and then you have the reactive rules that I actually define on the business metric, which is the number of documents received per hour. And based on that, you see that the green line, which denotes the actual instances, how it goes up and down, how it scales up and down over a period of time. Now, in the next chart, what you see is a more interesting scenario where you actually see both the constraint rules and the reactive rules interact. And what you see here is that now you don't have just a static boundary for your instances, but it also changes with time based on the constraint rules. You can see how the red line and the blue line adjust accordingly, and as a result the reactive rules are allowed to go up and scale significantly larger on Fridays between 12 and 6 p.m. according to a couple of those rules. One important thing to keep in mind is that we envision that the process of specifying these rules is not going to be something that people fire and forget. It's going to be largely iterative in nature, and you start with determining the requirements and the business constraints, your SLAs, you go and you formulate the rules, those get encoded, uploaded, the application runs, the autoscaler runs as part of that application. It records the results, and then later on you should be analyzing the results, looking at whether the autoscaling actions that have been taken actually meet your objectives, and potentially refine your requirements and constraints and do it several times. This is our high-level conceptual architecture. So we have a metronome, and that's the one that kicks off some components, such as data collector and rule evaluator at their specific tempos, so they may have different timings there. The data collector goes and queries various sources. You can see that you could use the Windows Azure Diagnostic Tables or Azure Store API or the Azure Store Analysis and Monitoring APIs or some other data that you may instrument in your app as sources, and then it will populate a sampling store. So the data collector, for it to know what it needs to query and what it needs to gather, it will actually read some rules from the rule store, infer from there what data collection needs to take place, and then it will query the sources accordingly and populate the store. The rule evaluator, in turn, will read the service config. This is where the service information model resides, and will show more what's included there, basically all the various knobs. Then you have a rule store, and this is where all your rules reside. And notice this is separate. This is separated from the service information store, because this you may actually edit. The service information store you may edit much less than the updates and modifications that you may be making to the rule stores, and potentially the rules will be even edited by a different person. So then it goes and reads, based on the rules here, it goes and reads the data from the sampling store and does its evaluation, rule reconciliation, and figures out what action needs to be taken. Based on that, it will either go and execute the scaler that will end up taking action for, you know, specific web role, worker role, or scale group, or you may end up executing the throttle action, or you may do a notify action. Think about this as almost doing a hypothetical auto-scaling without actually taking the scale actions, where the human being, gets notified, and then he can make a final decision and go and manually intervene and do updates to the number of instances. Or the other thing is that you can do the custom action. I already mentioned earlier that Enterprise Library is extremely extensible, so this is one of the extension points. You'll also notice that all three components do logging through the logger, and you can easily use the system diagnostics login that's available to you, or you can utilize the login application block that also ships as part of Enterprise Library. And there you have a convenient set of various login syncs that you can direct your messages to. The other thing to mention here is that the host that uses the application block can be hosted in the cloud, or it could be on-premises application. All right. At this moment, we're going to do the walkthrough of this experience of getting the block and hosting it, configuring it, authoring the rules, and then seeing the autoscaler actually taking action and scaling up and down. So let's switch to Visual Studio now.
Yes. So this demo is going to have two main parts. The first part is a developer-oriented part, integrating the block in an application and that can host it and run it. And the other part is an IT pro / dev task of configuring the block and making it act in the way you want. For hosting the autoscaler block, we are going to use a worker role. We are going to start almost from scratch. This is not quite the file new Azure application setup, but we have a fairly empty worker role. Doesn't do much. We don't have a reference to the block. And the delivery mechanism that we're using for the block is it's a NuGet package. So we are going to take advantage of the fact that we've released the preview of the package. And we're going to use we're going to get it from the official
NuGet source. Yeah, if you use Wasabi as a keyword, it will give you only the two packages that we released. If you do something like Antlib, you'll get 30-something packages. If you do Azure, you get way more. So Wasabi is the easiest one. Okay? So what we see is that it is installing the Windows Azure Autoscaling application blog, it also takes care of all the dependencies.
Yes.
And pulls them in, so you don't have to go and do it on your own.
Yes, exactly. And it also adds the schema files to later facilitate the authoring of the rules and the service model. And it also, and this is very good for us, it performs the bookkeeping that allows the configuration tool to author the configuration for the block. So it's very convenient. We're going to start by adding the autoscaler to the worker role. It's very simple. The class of the autoscaler, if you're familiar with the Enterprise Library way of doing things, we usually have objects that provide a main entry point for functionality in the different blocks. In this case, it's the autoscaler class that provides the entry point.
And you can get it in a variety of ways, you know, either doing the resolve or going through the service locator. But
yes, you can new up a new instance, you can get it from the default Enterprise Library container that relies on the configuration. That's the path we are going to follow. But if you are familiar with the way of doing things on Enterprise Library, it will feel exactly like the way you will do with other blocks.
Yeah. And if you are not, then the developer's guide for Enterprise Library, freely available online on MSDN, is your starting point. msdn.com/antlib is the address. Okay, so we're going Enterprise Library container current, get instance autoscaler, that gives us the autoscaler. We start it, and then in the onStop method when we get notified, okay, we're going to stop it. That's it. This is all we need to host the autoscaler in the worker role.
Yes, exactly.
We still need to configure it, but this is as much code as you need to write.
Exactly. So now we acquire a reference to the autoscaler as defined by configuration. We need to define what that configuration looks like. So we are going to use the Enterprise Library configuration tool which is enhanced by the configuration support for the autoscaling block as a byproduct of adding the NuGet package to our solution.
Do you want to quickly show where you can get it from if you go to the Explorer, to the Visual Studio Gallery? Enterprise Library. That's enough, yeah. There we go. So that's where you get your config tool. You just download, install it, and you get it integrated in your Visual Studio. Okay?
Yes. So we've added the configuration for the block. This is the operational configuration for the block. These are the knobs that tell the block how often to evaluate rules, where to get the rules and the service information from, how to log, where to store the sampling data that it collects. We are going to rely on the defaults for the demo. We still need to provide some connection string names to let the block know where to store and to get information from. And this is because we are using an Azure table to store the metrics we collect.
So, but it doesn't have to be the blob store for us to store rules or for us to store the data points. You can configure to store it in other places.
Out of the box, you can configure it to store it in a file, and you can provide your custom store if you have other needs. So we need to provide the name of the connection string, because we are hosting it in an Azure worker role. We can rely on connection strings stored in the service configuration file, and that's what we are going to do. If we were hosting it on-premise on a Windows service or on a console application, we will need to provide the actual connection string. Mm-hmm. This is part of what we didn't start from scratch. We did define the names of the connection strings for the different pieces of information, and we are going to bump up the rule evaluation tempo so that it happens more often. In this demo, because we are going through the development part, we are going to run the worker role in the compute emulator. We are not going to upload it to Windows Azure. That will take some time. So the configuration tool still needs some polishing on to add the descriptions and the tooltips for help, but it's essentially the layout that we're going to follow.
So this execution lease, this is something that you should enable if you are hosting the autoscaler app, right? If you're hosting it in Azure and you do not want to end up multiple instances trying to do scheduling at the same time, right?
Yes, exactly.
So we're enabling this by using the execution lease mechanism, right?
Yes. So if you're hosting the block in a worker role that might have more than one instance, you only want one of those instances to be performing the autoscaling. And the mechanism we use, as you said, is...
And if one of them dies, the other one picks it up, but that's when the execution list would be released, and then they can go and... Okay,
exactly.
So that's the idea of the execution list. Let's, again, very quickly go and look at the main categories here. We have the rules store. Okay, this one points to where my rules are. We have the service information store. That's for the service model, and we'll look at some of the details. But that's where effectively your connection strings and other details are stored, right? And then we have some additional advanced options, but you can pretty safely go with the default options there.
Yes, you would only need to provide the connection strings, either the actual connection string or the name of a setting that is defined in your service configuration file.
And then you have we have another category here. That's where you specify the logger, and that's how where you say how you want the login to be done through.
Yes.
Either the logger that is.
This is based on system diagnostics.
System diagnostics, so it doesn't require any extra blocks from Ntlib, or you can replace it with the login application block or any other login infrastructure that that you like.
Yes. We've saved the configuration, and we can see that the configuration has been updated. We have two main pieces of new information here: the configuration for the block itself, but also because this is a block that the enterprise library core doesn't know about, we have to let the core know that there's some new information for a new block that needs to be taken in consideration, mm-hmm. so that the enterprise library container can properly populate and configure itself
and resolve.
In order to resolve the autoscaler.
Yeah.
So we have added the reference to the NuGet package, we've added the code to host the autoscaler, we've edited the configuration file for the worker role to properly specify how the autoscaler should behave. Now we need to author the rules.
Well, we still need to configure the services model too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the rules and the service model. So let's start by the service model. The service model is used to specify what's out there, what's going to be monitored and managed by the autoscaling. So it needs to know about subscriptions and hosted services, roles, storage accounts, and queues. And we also specify here the scale groups, which we will discuss later. There's a lot of information there that we need to specify. There's a schema to help you author this file, either inside Visual Studio or with a third-party editor that supports schemas. The schemas for the service and rules file are installed when you install the NuGet package.
Automatically, yes. And you don't have to do any additional associations, right?
So yes, if you're authoring the files inside Visual Studio, it will just pick the schemas up and
yeah. And if you're using some other cert tool, you'll just have to do the association manually.
Yes, using whatever mechanism that tool provides. So here we can specify subscriptions, and inside the subscription, you have to specify some information.
Yeah, like certificate store location, the thumbprint, the subscription ID, and et cetera.
Exactly. So in order for the autoscaler to be able to autoscale, it needs to have access to the management certificate for each of the subscriptions it's going to autoscale. You know, this is where you provide that information, and that's sensitive information, so we are not going to show what we are using for this demo, but this is where you will specify. Also, because there's a lot of settings in there, I'm just going to reuse the one we already have. So we have the subscription and the application that we are going to scale. This is a very simple application. It just has one role with, and currently it has one instance of that role.
Yeah. So again, as you will be using it in your subscription with your accounts, the subscription ID, the certificate thumbprint, and then the details later on with the storage account. This is what you'll need to provide hosted in your account, right? As well as all the other things that you see as part of the service model.
Yes, exactly. So this information that is available in different places, we
aggregated
it here, and we only need the information that the autoscaler will need to consume. And we also have some extra settings, like, for example, the role needs to define the storage account that it will use to store the diagnostics information, because that's going to be consumed when gathering the metrics for the performance counters for that role, and that kind of relationship between the different pieces of service information. As part of configuring the service model, we specify what the certificate thumbprint is and where it is stored, but that certificate itself needs to be deployed in the system where the autoscaling block is going to be working. So, and you need to match the configuration of the subscription with the actual location of the certificate in that machine that will host the autoscale. So this is what the service model looks like. Of course, you can get more of each of the different pieces of information. You can have many subscriptions, many services, and different roles in the service. Those, of course, are a view of the reality in Azure, and if that view doesn't match what is actually deployed, you will get errors at runtime saying, hey, you told me to scale a role with name
such
demo
and such
web app, but that role actually didn't exist, so yeah. I couldn't do it.
So actually, you mentioned an important thing that I may have forgotten to talk about earlier. The way the autoscaling block, the way we're implementing it is that the targets against which you can take actions, they can actually span multiple hosted service, multiple subscriptions. They can come from various pieces. So you can have this centralized application with the autoscaler that actually takes care of many, many different worker roles, web roles, many different pieces. Right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Very good. So now, what shall we?
Now we are going to define roles.
Roles. Okay.
We are doing the definition of the services and the definition of the roles at the same time for this demo, but those are very likely going to be
different activities by different,
different
people.
Activities, and also with a different cadence. You will most likely define roles much more often than update the service model. So we're going to start with the constraint roles.
And as a reminder again, constraint rules are the ones that you write based on some tables, timetables or schedules, something that you can predict.
Exactly. Yeah, and in this case, because this is what we are going to call the default role, we always want this to be the baseline. We are not going to specify a timetable, it will be on always. And we're going to say that for our target, which is, let me copy the name from here, it's our worker role.
Yeah.
We want between
one and two.
And two instances by default.
So again, if you wanted to specify a rule that would have an associated timetable, then you would just have an additional element
exactly.
Inside rule. But yeah. This one applies at all times. So this is our guard. Very
yes.
Good.
And keep in mind, this is one of the possible mechanisms for storing rules. You could provide your own custom store. And also you could build some kind of UI or authoring tool on top of the XML and expose it in a different way.
Yeah, and then the other thing that you'll notice is that in the rule element, other than the name, you see enabled true, because again, unless you specify enabled true, it will not be enabled. So that's something that allows people to actually go and configure, but to have certain rules turned off, and we are actually envisioning the mechanism where the rules can be turned on, turned off. And then the other thing you see here is the rank, and that's how you can specify the priority or the precedence of rules that are overlapping. So the higher the number, the higher the precedence.
Yes.
So the high number overrules. And can I have multiple rules with the same rank? What happens then?
If that's the case for the same target, then we will issue a warning saying there's more than one matching rule with the same rank, and pick the first one.
Okay, very good. So, and now I can see that you already started authoring a reactive rule.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're going to define a reactive rule. Also in its name, we're going to call it heavy load.
Sure.
And it's going to be enabled. We don't care about the rank for this particular one. And we want this rule to be considered active when the queue length for the queue that we have defined in the service model is higher than a given number. So we need an operand. We will have to define it later on. That's going to be called queue length average.
Mm-hmm.
And we are saying that it has
the threshold is what?
Yeah,
three? Okay. So again, the way we read this rule is that when queue length average is greater or equal than 3, then we take the following action. And the action is scale. Scale what? The target. So it's going to be autoscaling.demo web app. I actually haven't showed the demo web app yet, but you'll see. It's a very sophisticated, air quote, application. So, and then we're saying that we want to scale this application by the factor of 1. Okay, the unit that the one that allows you to specify absolute scaling or relative, you know, where you can say percent change. So you can do relative to the current number of instances that you have.
So now we need to define what this operand looks like.
Yeah, and while you're typing that, let me remind everybody that the constraint rules always have higher precedence than the reactive rules. Yeah. So you will not be able to scale above what the maximum field, maximum setting is for the in the constraint rule. Okay. So in the operand, we're saying that the queue length average, that's the operand, is effectively a test queue, and that's a test queue is something we define in the service model, didn't we?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That actually points to the actual Azure queue. See the queue test. Can you go below? Yeah, test queue, queue name equals test queue. There we go. So we're saying that the test queue, all right, length, yeah. And we're saying that the way we're going to evaluate that, we're going to get the average length of the test queue over last 6 minutes.
Yes.
That's the time span. Okay.
Now, it's important to know that this entry will define both what can be used when evaluating the rule, but it will also determine what needs to be collected. Because we have this operand, the every so often the current queue length for that queue, as defined in the service model, will be queried, and that will be saved in our data points store so that it can be consumed to evaluate rules.
Yeah, so we don't specify, you don't need to specify separately what needs to be collected. The data collector in our architecture will read this from the rule store and infer what needs to be collected based on these operand. Okay, so now that our rules are defined, what's next?
So we need to upload the files to the blob containers where the block is configured to look for them. Again, this is because we are using the default configuration that relies on blobs.
And again, how does the block know that it needs to go and look into those locations? That's where you specified it in the block configuration, right?
Yeah, so I used the default blob container and blob names. You only had to specify the storage account where those containers reside. So we are going to upload the service information store.
Yeah, and this is actually this is our app.
Yeah,
this is our demo
is
app
our
that
demo.
We're trying to scale, but we're also using it to upload the configuration, the rules, and also populate our queue with extra messages and remove messages. It's not meant to be overly sophisticated, but it does the good job for the demo. Okay.
Yeah. So we have the block configured, the rules uploaded. It's time for us to run the block, the host for the block.
Mm-hmm.
Going to run it locally. Now, things in Azure take some time. We will use some kind of time machine at some point
to fast forward it so that you're not sitting there and waiting for the Azure to update our configurations for deployments.
Yeah, so now we can see that there are only two messages in the queue we are monitoring. And what we will see in the logs is that everything's fine. There's no need for the autoscaler to do any work because it's already within the limits specified by the default constraint rule. And there's no need to increase the instance count based on the reactive rule. The rule evaluation, as we've changed the default, will happen every 30 seconds. So we'll see anytime soon that there's a log saying I didn't need to make a change. Okay, so we are watching the block do its work. it's determined that it has one instance and it doesn't need to change, it's within the limits, so there's nothing to do.
So now let's create this spur of demand.
We're going to add some messages. Long enough messages for it to kick in the reactive rule. Now, there's time involved in here. The metrics need to be captured. The evaluation has to take place. So this will take some time.
But can we see in the test queue that we actually have more messages now?
Yeah, but we have more messages.
Uh-huh.
If we were dealing with performance counters, there would be even more variables to consider when it comes to timing. Mm-hmm. It would be the sampling period in each role instance for the performance counters. It would also be the time or the rate at which the performance counter information is uploaded by each role to the Azure tables. So let's peek into this. It still doesn't need, didn't recognize the need to scale up yet. So we will give it a minute. Mm-hmm. So we see a spur of activity here.
A new role scaling request is about to be submitted, I can see, okay.
Yeah, so now we determine the need to scale up. And we determine that the new instance count for this should be 2 because the reactive rule kicked in, and now we are effectively sending the request to the management through the management API to Azure to scale up that that instance. And we see in the portal that this is taking place.
Yeah.
This will eventually finish. In the meantime, while this request is in progress, we will still, because of the way we are manipulating the load, the block will still determine that a scale-up needs to happen. It's still seeing that the average is over the limit. But while the the previous scaling request is in place, it will be unable to perform any more changes, even if it could, which it can't in this.
It can't because of the constraint rule, and it also cannot because the change of the configuration deployment is in place. So
currently it's saying I cannot make any changes because the hosted service is not in a running state. So we are back. The scaling action finally finished, and now the reactive rule still sees the same average, so it will still try to push the instance count up, but we are already at the limit, so we are not going to keep scaling up. We've reached the maximum, even though we would like to scale up, we are not allowed, and then the request for this scale operation is dropped.
Yeah.
So what do we do now?
How about we allow for more instances, so we change the max, but instead of modifying the default rule, let's just bring in another rule that will be enacted just for a short time that will allow us to scale up. Can we do that?
Sure can. So let's add the rule. We're going to name it peak time.
Yeah.
And of course it has to have a higher rank.
Actually, can we do that not from Visual Studio? Can we do that from, I don't know, Notepad or from other tool? I want to emphasize the point that this is something that for authoring and editing the rules, you're not required to have a Visual Studio. And again, if you have somebody in operations, they may not be using Visual Studio as their primary tool in the toolbox. So let's do it from somewhere else. You have some editors?
Yeah, let's try with Thomas.
Okay. Or any other third party XML authoring tool of your choice. All right.
So in Visual Studio, it just happens to pick up the schema. now I need to let this particular editor know what's the schema for this.
If you want to get autocomplete.
File. Yeah, well, of course. Which is very convenient.
There's your schema.
So the worker role.
Yeah.
That's the schema that adding the NuGet package copied for me.
Mm-hmm.
So now this editor knows about
rules.
About the rules. This time we are going to have a timetable. We wanted to have a duration of, let's say,
10 minutes.
Starting at, let's say, 1:25.
1:25, okay.
And we care about the UTC offset. We are specifying this rule in our local time, which is -7.
This is what you'll need to do if you have a combinations of rules, or you have rules that are authored by various people and they may be in different time zones. So you'll just through the UTC offset, that's how you can easily operate on the times and time zones that are relevant to you, that
yes,
are local
exactly.
to you.
And if you don't care about your local time or the local time of where you're
it's
going to
be
targeting.
GMT. It's going to be UTC.
It's going to be UTC. You need to specify it. You have to do the time conversion and specify the start time in UTC terms.
So let's just reiterate what we have just done. We've added a new rule to the set of the rules, and it's a constraint rule. We associated a timetable with this. We said that every Thursday from 1325 UTC -7, this rule will run for 10 minutes. We still need to provide an action.
Yes, exactly. So what we want here is
actions. Okay.
We're going to range a minimum of 2 and a maximum of
5
for the same target.
Yeah, could have been a different target, but in this demo, this is what we are playing with, so good.
So we've saved it. Now we have to upload this new version of the rules.
So that just needs to get to that blob storage where the rules are. So we don't need to do anything in terms of the application itself. The application is running.
It's still running.
It will be dynamically picked up at the next time when the cadence comes for the rule evaluator to do the evaluation and reconciliation, right?
Exactly. So now we have to wait for essentially the worker role to pick up the changes.
Oh, there it was. Minimum 2, maximum 5. It's right there.
We didn't have to wait too much.
Nice.
We can see that the previous one said I'm going to stay at 2 because that's my maximum.
Yeah.
Now it picked up the change. The new maximum is 5, so I'm allowed to go up.
To three. Yeah.
And we will see now that the when this other tool refreshes, that there's a change in the worker role.
Yeah. There we go. Now it's updating, and you can see that there is a cert. See the cert instance
the
already doing. Yeah. So this is good. And one of the questions you may ask again is this something that can. Can be scaled up or down by 1. No, it could be anything you want. You can specify. Can you just actually go back and specify, show in the rule itself? I know we kind of indicated that, but I want people to look at it again. So this is where you say, in factor, if you want to scale it by 2, so every time instead of incremented by 1, you can just do 2. Right? And if you switch absolute to, I think right now it says relative, right? But we may update that schema. And call it percentage change or something like that when we do the beta and the final release. But essentially, again, you can either do it in absolute terms or in relative terms, and that would work.
So now we are, as we were before, we are in the middle of a change in instance count, so anything that we want to do is rejected. We are still asking for an increase because our metrics haven't changed. Although I did, in a sneaky way, remove some of the messages. Let's check how many messages are still there. Four, I need to remove a few more, so that the reactive rule stops asking for an increase. And this will take some time for the metrics to be picked up and for the previous scaling action
to finish.
Let's give it some time. So we are back. The application is still finishing the previous scale action, and because of the messages we've removed from the queue, the reactive rule doesn't want to scale up anymore. So we're seeing that we are staying at the instance count of three.
Three.
But it's close to the end of our peak time rule.
Yeah, we have the expiration in 10 minutes, right? And we started at 13:26. So I think any second now we should.
Yeah. So we are.
We should expire.
Just in time. The previous scaling operation just finished.
Okay.
And now it's time to go back to a maximum of two because our rule has expired.
And we should see that.
So
it
just happened. The peak time rule expired. We are currently on three, so it's time to go back to two. And because the application can be changed, we are scaling down to the maximum allowed by the default rule. If we had scaled even more to say four or five instances, which was still within the limits of the peak time rule, we will go all the way down to two because that's the new allowed
maximum
range. So this is it. The constraint rules limited what could be done, and the interaction between them was based on the ranks. While the higher ranked peak time rule was in effect, we could scale up. Then scaling up took care of the heavy load that we had with the messages, so that reactive rule wouldn't trigger anymore. We weren't scaling up anymore, and we were within the peak time limits. When the peak time was over, we went down to the, which is what is happening now, we're going down to the default allowed limit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't have a rule to scale down. That's certainly possible if the factor was negative, and we detected that there were no messages in the queue, we may want to scale down. And also something to take into consideration is here we are performing a scale action as soon as possible. That's even better for demo purposes. But in reality, the component, the kinetic stabilizer that Grigori mentioned, will reject scaling requests that are issued too early after or too soon after a previous scaling action took place.
Yeah, so I'll invite you to stay tuned for our future updates on the kinetic stabilizer and other things. In this demo, let me just, there are a couple things that I still want to reiterate or to point out in terms of the rules. So I just want to highlight what our extension points are for the rules. So people would be able to define their own custom actions. So when it comes to the actions, you don't have to utilize range or scale or notify or some other ones. So you would be able to do your custom action. That's one place. Another thing where you will have an extension point is within the operands. So yes, you will have things like performance counters, and you can map them to the specific performance counters provided by the the Windows Azure Diagnostics, or it could be something like a custom business rule that you'll define. And we're not showing it in this demo, but in the future we'll show and teach you how you can actually define your own custom metrics. So that's with regard to the extension points. Okay, so that's what I wanted to show you in terms of the extension points for the rules and the actions. And one last thing to mention today is, if we go back to the DAC, the scale groups. So again, something else that you can define your actions to target. Okay, and effectively, it's nothing, nothing too fancy, but a convenience. It's a convenient way of grouping your multiple roles and then applying the rules on the scale groups at once. So if you have, some customers had indicated that they may have not just dozens, they may potentially have hundreds or even thousands of rules, this is something that will allow you to reduce the number of rules, especially if they're based on the same triggers or on the same schedules. So the scale groups are defined using ratios. So you can see my example here. I may have a scale group that consists of three targets, a worker role A in service host A, a worker role A in service host B, and the worker role A in service host A, sorry, and the web role. So I have three different targets, and then the ratio is 2-1-3. So if I were to issue a request to, let's say, scale up by 2, what I'm going to end up is that the instance count for target A will increase by 4. The instance count for target B will increase by 2, 1 times 2, and the instance count for target C will increase by 6. So again, as you can see, the targets within the scale group can spawn multiple various hosted services. They don't have to be within a single host. And one other thing to mention here is that these are non-transactional in nature, so we do not guarantee preservation of these ratios. So if something happens, and either during the auto-scaling action or some other way, let's say there was a manual intervention in your operator and went and modified the number of instances for target B, then whatever action will be taken from that point on, that may not preserve the ratio that you originally defined for the scale groups. So that's the idea of scale groups. On that note, thank you very much, and see you soon with the updates.